And in the 1990s, something interesting happened, because very quickly, the cultural industries went from being this old style industry to cutting edge. But it happened within a few years. I was there, you know. But in the late 80s, it was, this is an artistic cultural sector that we might like or we might not like. But suddenly, this is cutting edge of the new economy. These old style industries became networked, project based. They were about SMEs, which is small medium enterprises, small businesses. They were ideas intensive. They were audience focused. They had to be innovative. So all these new fashionable words suddenly placed on the cultural industries, and they became much more interesting to governments. And so, by the late 1990s, these cultural industries could be easily linked to new ideas of the information economy, the knowledge economy, or what came to be known as the new economy. And it's on this basis that the Labour government in England, in the United Kingdom, decided to change the name. To change the name from cultural industries to creative industries. And as I said last week in an answer to a question, this was not some... people always ask me, what's the difference between creative and cultural? It's purely a political tactic. They thought creative industries sounded better than cultural industries, because cultural industries sounded like culture, and culture meant subsidy. It meant they didn't make money, they were just took money, whereas creative sounded like the new economy and would produce money. And the culture ministry in the United Kingdom thought, we need to get money off the economic people from the Treasury. And so they cut, just in one night, they just turned, said, right, we'll call it creative industries. Good idea, right. And they took it to the boss, Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, and said, will you give us some money? Look, we're creative, we're new economy. Okay, good idea. So that's really how it worked. And I want to be a bit critical of that, because I think it's important to understand some of the shifts that change of name brought with it. Because although I'm sort of joking, but although creative was a political tactic, actually it had some very important consequences. Because it became easily linked to this idea of the new economy, the informational economy, the knowledge economy. And in fact, this shift ignored, as I say, it ignored some really real changes in economy and culture. It ignores some of the cultural questions that had been part of this previous cultural industries agenda. And I'll explain that a bit later. But first, I just want to explore a bit about what does creative industries mean? So, the creative industry agenda, it was 1998, the UK produced its document, and within 2 or 3 years, it had spread, especially in East Asia regions, but elsewhere. And it seemed to be about these. It seemed to be about the economic argument for culture. So governments in Hong Kong or Singapore said, right, this is a new economic sector. Culture is not just about us giving money to culture. It's about culture producing wealth. Great. It also seemed to be about involved culture outside the arts sector. And for many people, this was quite a democratic thing, because the arts have often been associated with the elites, with museums and art galleries and symphonies, and all very boring and elitist. This seemed to be about a new culture, not involved in all this. It also suggested there could be a cultural input into a non-cultural economy, which means that perhaps, especially with design, perhaps cultural knowledge could go into the wider economy, rather than just being in one part of culture. It's now very important for the rest of the economy. And of course, this is why many governments saw the opportunity with design, a new kind of design, to produce new kinds of industries. But it's also, and I think this is very important, it felt part of this new kind of youthful energy. It seemed like a sense of, this is a new culture, this is a democratic culture, this is a new approach, and it's good. Many people were for it. It was against the old hierarchies, of the cultural hierarchies, the arts elites, and it opened up new possibilities for change. So I do think there were some positive energies that came with this agenda. And as I've said, it had a real global impact in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, Singapore, in China, but also in Korea, South Korea, in Indonesia, a whole range of other places. And it was interesting that in Japan, when the new government came in 2008, you know, after 40 years, you know, Japan thought, oh, we'll go for creative industries. Everything's changing, so let's have creative industries. So it did have a global impact. But I think we have to be very clear about something, because maybe in the question and answers we'll talk about the Chinese situation, but we need to be really clear as to what this creative industry means and what we want to pursue. What do we really want from this agenda? We do need to understand how to develop the creative industries, if we want to call them that. But we also need to know why. Why do we want to develop them? So I'm using President Obama's campaign slogan here. He said, change we need, which means let's have change we need, not just change. And I think last week's talk about modernization, you know, we don't just want modernization, but what kind of modernization? What kind of change? So here's the definition of in the 1998 document. And you can see the list of activities there. If you look, actually, in fact, it's exactly the same as any list of cultural industries. I was involved in cultural industry studies in the 1990s, and this is exactly what we did. Advertising, architecture, arts and antiques, market, crafts, design, fashion, film and video. The only new thing, actually, is number 12, software and computing services. Everything else was always, it's a cultural industry. Number 12 was interesting, because when they tried to use this list to find how many people were employed by these industries and how much money did they make, they came out with quite a big figure. It came out in London, for instance, maybe 10% of employment was in this sector. You know, and if you start to add tourism on top of that, it really goes up. But 10% is a lot. And when you go to some of the smaller cities in the UK, and it's the same in Europe, you find about 6-7% are employed in these sectors. You know, that's a lot. In Australia, for example, these kind of industries employ more people than agriculture. You know, and they employ more people than the steel industry. So these are quite big sectors. The interesting thing was that number 12 there, when you saw the graph of employment, it went arts, music, da, da, da. When it got to number 12, it was a huge difference. And this number 12 made up something like 35% of total employment figures. So in fact, one of the first criticisms of this was that this is a cheat, because in promoting the creative industries, they've added software and computer services with it, which have a huge employment, but actually, what are they to do with culture? Because, you know, we've got this number eight, interactive leisure software. It means computer games. So computer games, fine, you know, that's culture, it's popular culture, great. But software and computer services, it's me making code, or me developing computer programs. In what way is this cultural? And I'll come back to that question in a moment, but one of the criticisms is that actually this is increase the figures in order to show to the government that this is a big sector. But in fact, it's actually not that much bigger than the old cultural industries sector. So, and lots of debates around statistics that I won't bore you with here. The other problem, of course, was the definition. Those industries which have their origin in individual creativity, skill and talent, and have the potential for wealth and job creation through the generation and exploitation of intellectual property. Great definition. Everybody loved it, you know. But actually, what really does it mean? And immediately people began to say, well, this stresses the individual rather than the complex industries or ecosystems where they're from. So this is industries which have their origin, individual creativity, skill and talent. Well, is it individual? I mean, these are industries. These are complicated, to make a film, it's a very complicated set of skills. It's a collective product, not about individual skills and talent. So big problems with that sort of definition. Secondly, intellectual property. Well, it's not the main source of income for most creative businesses. Anybody who's involved in them knows that actually most people don't own the intellectual property. That this question is too big to address here. Some of the big companies own intellectual properties right at the top, but most people don't trade in those. And it was put forward because it sounded like the new creative economy. And I'll come back to that. But my main issue here, given the theme of this workshop, is this idea of creativity, creative industries. It's all about creativity. Well, what is creativity? Really, what does it mean in this context? Because it becomes the central defining characteristic of these individuals and businesses. Why are they creative industries? Because they're creative. What do these creative industries produce? Products with creativity in them. So, what is this creativity? Big question. Also, then the question is, these industries might be that this creativity could be extended from creative industries to the rest of the economy. You know, we all need to be creative. The economy needs to be innovative. So these industries can be catalysts. They can help spread creativity throughout the system. So in the 1990s, in East Asia, high tech was the big competitive input. You know, first it was low wage, then it was post-Fordism, then it's high-tech. Now everybody needs to be creative. That's the next step. So you could see creativity, how it was being used here. Creativity becomes a central driver of innovation and becomes justified because of this economic impact. So all the governments are saying, we need creative industries because it's part of our new innovation-driven creative economy. So it becomes an input into the system. Let's find some creativity, put it into the system. Or in individuals, you know, human capital, the workforce, we need a new creative capacity to develop in an individual, or a group, or a city. So it becomes this almost the central characteristic of contemporary economies. And we get lots and lots of books. If you search on Google, or is it Baidu or something, if you search for creativity books, many, many books, and you get lots of books about the psychological books, about the creative mind, or anthropological books on human engineering, problem solving, left brain, right brain, all these sort of issues. Lots of books within education on how to promote creativity. It becomes a big thing. And I must say, I'm very skeptical about this, because I don't think creativity is a capacity that can be identified in the brain, or certainly not in this sense. Because, as we saw last week, this idea of creativity goes back at least 500 years. I showed this last week, if you remember. This is God creating Adam. You know, the idea of that humans can create, it's been central to certainly Western Enlightenment theory for 500 years. You know, we've got the man, this is Alberti, is a very famous Renaissance writer. Man gives measure to all things. Or a bit later, 200 years later, Kant asking the question, how do we give measure to all things? On what grounds do we give measure to all things? Or Hegel, man creates himself in creating the world. And of course, Marx, you know, man creates history, but not in conditions of his own making. We talked about that last week. So creativity, the problems of creativity, how we deal with it, what happens when creativity escapes us, as Marx talks about, it's a central problem of modernity, absolutely central. So my point here is that we need to be very specific about what we mean by creativity. Otherwise it becomes either just banal, you know, oh well, everybody's creative, of course everybody's creative. You know, who's not creative? A vegetable is not creative, I suppose, but, you know, it becomes just boring and banal. Or it's ideological. And I believe creative industries has got a strong ideological element, because it's saying somehow, finally, we're being creative. But in fact, is this really what we're talking about when we're talking about the creative industries? So I want to put that rise of creativity in some context. It comes from three different areas over the last 20, 30 years. And these are fairly obvious. First of all, it comes from the emergence of the information and knowledge economy. You know all this. I don't need to explain this. The idea of innovation and competitiveness generating by ideas as being the central force of the next wave of economy. In the West, all our industry, except for Germany perhaps, but a lot of our industry, you know, went to China, to East Asia, China, and in America and Europe we're saying, well, what do we do now? We'll do ideas. You'll do the work, we'll do the ideas. And so it became ideas, innovation, creativity, information, knowledge. This was competitive edge. But the question about innovation became not just about research, you know, high-level research and design, but increasingly as it became wrapped up in the idea of creativity, we get this emphasis on bending the rules, operating at the edges, being intuitive. And you see it in management literature in the 1980s. It's not just about A to B to C to D. You know, that's scientific research. It starts at A and gradually works its way A, B, C, D, E. But they're saying, well, actually, creativity, innovation, is about going from A to F. It's jumping about. It doesn't follow rules, maybe, or it bends the rules, or it operates at the edges of rules. We even hear about being intuitive. Last week we talked about the separation of reason from intuition. But now it's about maybe the genius, the creative genius, can jump about. And so we get increasingly this idea of the role of the exemplary role of the artist or the scientist, but not the boring scientists in white coats, but Einstein and, you know, these geniuses. They don't go in straight lines. They go out, they move around, they're creative. So actually what we see is this emphasis on innovation begins to bring in aspects of artistic work. And prior to this, artists were just crazy people. They were crazy bohemians. They did art. We're scientists. We're technology. We do this. In the 1980s, oh, well, maybe the artists can help us. So we also get the idea of culture and cultural capacity as being a productive resource. So traditionally, we've seen in modernity, there's the economy. That makes money, that generates a wealth, and here's culture. This gives us meaning, this gives us art, but also everyday meaning, our everyday sense of who we are and what it is to be alive. And somehow these two are in conflict, or they don't quite go together. You know, the problems, as we saw last week. Now, in an information society, culture is a resource. And when I say culture, I don't mean art here, just. I mean, the most general definition of culture is symbol making, our ability to make symbols. So reading and writing, mathematics, but it's also about cultural knowledge, cultural understanding of how we do things, practices, traditions, habits, customs, that are embedded in our culture. So Manuel Castells, the great French sociologist who wrote the big book on the network society, very famous book in the mid-90s, he begins to talk about how cities must use the cultural capacity of their people. So it's not just about, you know, all you come and work in my factory, it's actually about now what skills do you have, what not just specific skills, but what general cultural skills. Are you innovative? Are you creative? Are you flexible? Are you able to learn quickly? And so we get this idea that maybe some cities have got a cultural capacity that allows them to succeed. California, flexible. Whereas some cities, maybe they're too rigid and structured. Boston, New York, maybe they're actually old, maybe they're too hierarchical, maybe they've become solid. All these issues. So culture becomes a capacity in that way.